and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we are doing on Wednesday morning because we had to watch some terrific basketball that took place in the NBA on Tuesday night as they squeeze in a bunch of games between the NCAA tournament. Joining me from New York City is Tim Bonteps.
Hello, everybody.
And joining us from Dallas, Texas, where the Mavericks fans are celebrating tonight, is Ben McMahon.
Howdy, partners. I'd like to point out that only Bonteps is in morning time, and it's not by much. You're like not even near bedtime on the West Coast.
Well, I have to get up at 5 a.m. on the West Coast to get
a sleep update. We're immediately into sleep update time.
Well,
30 seconds in.
It is true. What do you want me
to say? Night, and that's the only reference to that team that we can have on the pod.
Listen, if you want me to call you at 5 a.m. to see how you're doing, McMahon, I will gladly do so. We can chat about what we're going to talk about.
Leave me a voicemail.
All right. So Dallas in the baseball series to theoretically end all baseball series, Dallas got a big win, blew the Kings out Tuesday night, both coming off back-to-backs, but the Kings an easier one. And at home, and Luka, who's been putting up numbers of various amounts for months, had a huge first half, established the Mavericks, and then they put this away, you know, midway through during the second half. McMahon, Dallas is a team that, as I talk to people in the league, I talk to coaches, talk to scouts, they'll several different times in the last 7 to 10 days, people have been like, we just played Dallas and man, they're scary. Or I just saw Dallas and man, they look good. You know, you hear it once, you hear it twice. He's like, okay, yeah, I've heard that before. But Dallas is starting to show some teeth. I know defensively we've talked about them, but starting to show some teeth. And in a second, we're going to talk about the West standings.
Mm-hmm.
But the Mavericks situation is quite interesting and getting more so as they take this big game in SAC.
They have certainly made it interesting. They've won 9 of the last 10 now. The one loss in that stretch is when Lucas sat out in Oklahoma City, didn't make the trip because he had a little tightness in his hamstring. Obviously, that was minor and no big deal. And look, the defense is always going to be the question, but this stretch of 9 wins in 10 games started immediately after Jay Kidd, having looked at this team that, you know, through the first 5 or 6 games after the All-Star break was literally the worst defense in the league during that stretch, and said, okay, we've got to make some changes. He plugged Gafford in the starting lineup. He plugged Derek Jones Jr., who is their best on-ball defender, into the starting lineup. They also got Dante Exum back after he'd been out for a while, nursing a knee injury. He's their other guy who's a really
That's a
good
lot of length, defender. Those three
and
guys.
Look, and Maxi Kleba, he's not playing nearly as much center now. They are going with a tag team, the Gafford-Lively tag team. But when Maxi's playing the 4 next to one of those guys, that's an awfully big team. And a lot of times he'll play the 4. PJ Washington's playing the 3. They're much bigger than they were to start the season. They're much more athletic than they were to start the season, like drastically more athletic than last season's team. As Jay Kidd says, they can compete in the layup lines now. That's his kind of favorite line. And tonight's game, like, why are they dangerous? It really does get back to this. They are more athletic, they are bigger, but they've got two guys who can take over games. Luka dominated the first half, still a close game at halftime, and then Kyrie just came out in the third quarter and completely took the game over. Next thing you know, it's an absolute blowout, and suddenly you look at the standings and you kind of watch the Clippers stumble all over themselves and you say, man, could they finish as high as the 4 seed? Like, you know, look, obviously they could still stumble back into the play-in. They're, you know, they just kind of poke their heads out of that now. But I think as high as 4 is very much in play given the way the Mavericks are playing and given how the Clippers have been stumbling.
Well, and given their schedule. You know, after this baseball series, they have at Houston, at Golden State, home for Atlanta and Golden State and Houston, at Charlotte, at Miami, home for Detroit, at Oklahoma City. The next time they play a team after Friday that's around them in the standings or better is when they play Oklahoma City the last day of the season, a game that the Thunder could have nothing to play for. Like, we could be looking at a situation where the Mavs go 18-2 to close the season. They'll probably drop a couple games in there, but like, all those are, they're going to be favored to win just about every one of those games. And given, like you said, how the Clippers have fallen, got Brandon Ingram out for New Orleans. Certainly, you're looking at a scenario where we could be talking about Dallas having home court in the first round of the playoffs, which would obviously be a dramatic turnaround from where it looks like things are going to be a couple weeks ago. It would certainly make you feel a lot differently about where Dallas is overall and the direction they're headed in than if they're in seventh, eighth, or ninth and they're fighting to get out of the play-in like we've been expecting for weeks now.
Well, by the way, real quick, I had it muted. I didn't turn it off. I had it muted. I didn't hear what they were saying on the broadcast, but Mark Cuban was identified as Mavericks proprietor on TNT tonight. Was that a joke or is that
literally he's not the owner of the team anymore.
I know.
I don't know what proprietor means. I'd have to look that one up.
I was amused that at the tech summit at the All-Star game, he was identified, I believe, as entrepreneur and something else. And the word Mavericks or Dallas Mavericks were not listed anywhere at the NBA's marquee midseason event. So
we need some reporting out of you, McMahon, to find out what this Mavericks proprietor, if that's a legitimate.
I have to look it up in a dictionary to even know what the hell the word means.
Well, I don't even really know. Like, proprietor is a kind of a guy who like minds the store. Like it's kind of another word for owner, but
is it
not
a synonym for mascot?
No, but your point is well taken.
Just so you know, man, proprietor is an owner of an unincorporated business enterprise, a person enjoying exclusive right of ownership to some property.
I mean, he still has awesome seats.
He does. Could he be called like chairman emeritus or something? Governor emeritus?
That whole situation continues to be one of the stranger things we've ever seen in the NBA, where this guy sold the team and still is somehow being masqueraded around as being in charge of the team.
Patrick Dumont, the governor, made it clear that he's the governor and that Nico Harris
meaning
is
Patrick
GM.
Is.
Yes, Patrick Dumont.
Right, that's what I mean. Yeah. The whole thing is amazing.
But who
cares? It's just an amazing deal.
Listen, I know.
Mark Cuban has distracted. Great seats, and he's watching the Mavericks win a lot of games, so everybody's happy right now.
He has great seats, great teeth, and an interesting title. Yes, so Friday, 2 days off now in Sacramento. Let's see how the Mavericks handle this prosperity here because they put themselves in nice position. We'll see how the Kings bounce back.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
But you brought up the Clippers, Bontemps. Mm. The Clippers actually, I guess, technically had a good night on Tuesday night because the Thunder, who we'll talk about in a few minutes, had a very nice fourth quarter performance in winning in New Orleans.
The Clippers weren't playing. That's why it was a good night for the Clippers.
So they took over. They moved from fifth to back to fourth by half.
They regained.
There was a day in February where the Clippers were in first place. I believe it was just for a day, but they were in first place. And as the record, I kind of feel like this is going to be a record that is going to be repeated for a long time. They were at a stretch where they went 26-5. They looked like a team that had maybe not all the answers, but a lot of answers. And I was in a production meeting today before NBA Today, and we were going over the West play-in race, which is something we do almost every other day. Mm-hmm. And we were looking at a graphic and I go, oh, no.
Put one more team in there.
Because a couple days ago, the Rockets were promoted and now mm-hmm. we're promoted to 11th. And I was like, guys.
The red hot Houston Rockets.
We need to move some space down because we got somebody in reverse. Because I'm telling you, the Clippers have a 2-game cushion, if you want to call it that, in the loss column as they head out east. Starting in Philadelphia on Wednesday night.
The Clippers have followed up that stretch by going 10-12 over the past 50 days or so and go into that game, like you said, sitting just ahead of the Pelicans and Mavericks in the Western Conference standings.
And look, around the trade deadline, like if you asked, hey, who in the West really has a chance to beat the Nuggets? Because obviously the Nuggets are the clear favorites. And the Clippers were the easy answer, and they have been mediocre at best since then.
Not
mediocre. And look, you mentioned.
Well, he did say, to be fair, he did say at best.
And, you know, they're going to Philly. Obviously, Harden's going to get the hell boot out of him. They're asking him about that after the game on, I don't know what day today
is. Played, Monday.
Monday.
They played Sunday.
And he's basically like, man, we got bigger problems. And honestly, if you want to talk about what are the biggest problems for the Clippers, James Harden has been awful.
He hurt his shoulder. I don't know how that shoulder is doing, but his efficiency has reduced. Their biggest problem. I mean, he's also
back to being a dreadful defensive player.
Well, here we go. So Ty Lue got the soundbite on Monday night after they got beat by the Pacers.
The day after they got absolutely boat raced in the fourth quarter by the Sixers, who are terrible at
Sundays
the moment.
When they played the Sixers.
Right.
It was a really nice win for the Sixers. They needed it.
Every win for the Sixers is a good win right now. They can't beat anybody, and they absolutely demolished the Clippers at home.
So Ty Lue said they were, you know, he asked, what was that? He was asked about their mentality or their identity. That was it.
Their identity. And he used a four-letter word.
He said soft, and people are like, oh my God, he called this team soft. Well, let me tell you, going into tonight's games, and I'm sure the computations haven't changed, since the All-Star break, Clippers are 28th in defense.
I got one better for you. Since during this stretch, after they went 26-5 or whatever they were, they're 29th in defense.
Oh my God.
Only ahead of guess what team?
Capital W Wizards.
They're 28th. Should be second guess. I think you should get it.
Probably the capital L.
No, they're 26th.
Well, I know they're bad.
The Hornets are higher up. It's the team that we've been joking about losing games for weeks. The Jazz.
Oh yeah,
the Jazz, by the way, 5 points worse than the Clippers in terms of defense. Yeah. Been a rough stretch.
So
that's enough Jazz talk.
That's untenable. Now,
I would say 29th in the league of defense is untenable if you're trying to be
and Harden's been the worst
contending team.
You know, since the All-Star break, among their regular rotation players, he has the worst defensive rating, 122.6. And there are times, honestly, the best defense he's played since the All-Star break was when he contested Kawhi Leonard's shot, which was
one of the stranger moments.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I listened to his explanation for it, and he'd have to come a little bit ways back towards reality just to call it BS. The explanation for it was so bizarre.
He basically said he was joking around trying to kind of bring life to the team, which I don't know.
I'm sorry. It didn't make any sense. I reject it. I reject it. Joe Mazzulla had this weird, but he's like a crazy maniac competitor. Like he might challenge, like
trying to block a guy's shot on the other team, not his own team.
I understand.
It was very strange.
It was an insane move, and his logic was wild, but there was some sense to it. He said he didn't want to see the guy put the ball through the hoop.
And for context's sake, over that same stretch, Clippers have a 118.4 defensive rating, 29th in the league. James Harden, when he's up and on the court, 700 minutes. 120.5 defensive rating. The 350 minutes he's been off drops all the way to 112.
Well, it seems like we've pinpointed an issue. And
by the way, when Paul George is out there, goes from 114 when he's out there to 122.5 when he isn't out there. And Kawhi Leonard goes from 113.9 when he's out there to 125.
Has anybody seen the movie Rushmore?
Can't say I have.
I think I saw it a long time ago, but it's been a while.
It came out
it's
before Jackson was born.
Yes, I was going to say.
The classic scene with Bill Murray where he's on his cell phone.
Yes.
He's walking by a playground. There's a bunch of little kids. And he goes, hold on a second. And he goes over and blocks the kid's shot because he's a wacko. I could see Joe Mazzulla doing something like that. That's all I'm going to say.
Could you see James Harden?
Nope. No, I could not, sir.
Because it would be too much.
That would be too much effort. Yes,
dude. There was a bizarre, and I thought this told me that Harden's state of mind is completely in outer space right now. It was a shot clock violation in the second quarter of their loss Monday, and Kawhi threw him a total grenade, like put him in a bad spot. Gave him the ball with 1.5 seconds left on the shot clock. And Nembhard wasn't right on him, but Nembhard would have had a really good contest. But like, you get it with 1.5 on the shot clock, and he caught it a couple feet outside the three-point line. Like, you got to just jack that thing up. You just have to let it fly, because it's a low percentage shot, but low percentage is better than no percentage. And you know what also can happen? You can create an offensive rebound. How many times have you seen a prayer at the shot clock buzzer and it ends up being an offensive rebound? Harden did the classic, I'm going to protect my percentages move, where he pump faked, took a dribble. Oh, there's a shot clock buzzer.
Well, now, he's a free agent.
I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt that he did the classic percentage protection pump fake and dribble, and not that he was unaware of what the shot clock was, because this is one of the smartest players in the league. Like, basketball IQ, James Harden's top 10 in the league. So either he was more worried about his percentages than trying to help his team win the game, or he was so checked out that he wasn't even aware of the shot clock. Neither one of those is okay.
Well, and I do think we got to say too, if we're trying to diagnose what's going on with this team, I do, and I've been as critical of this guy as anybody, I do think a big part of the problem has been the absence of Russell Westbrook over the past several weeks. Like, say what you want about Westbrook, and I've certainly said plenty, but he, for a team that has a lot of flatliner personalities, he gives them a lot of energy and a lot of force when he plays. And that has been very lacking without him. I know he just came back the other day. We'll see how he plays as he gets back, but he was playing really well for them before he got hurt, and it seemed to really accept this role coming off the bench. And, you know, that impact, I think, has really been felt from that hand injury that kept him out for several weeks.
I also think, Ivica Zubac, he had that calf injury in February. And I mean,
he hasn't looked right.
Yeah. There have been times where a guy's gotten a drive to the, when I've just watched him, where there's guys had a drive to the rim and he's been in position where he could have challenged. Like, I'm not saying he's going to be Bill Russell, but where he's not been able to make an athletic move like he was before. He was playing best basketball of his career.
Yeah. And calf injuries are real tricky. Like, that can really affect your explosiveness. And yeah, early in the year, like, chemistry with him and Harden was really good. He was playing fantastic. Like, they've just felt like they're half a turn, or I mean, maybe a whole turn off for a while now. And it's, I mean, Ty's certainly been around the block a time or two, but that was certainly a sound the alarms presser the other day. And it will be very interesting to see how they respond in this game. I'll be at on Wednesday, because like I was just saying, I mean, the Sixer team is bad right now. They're just coming home from a West Coast trip. And, you know, Kelly Oubre missed the game Monday. He got banged up Sunday. Buddy Hield sprained his ankle. I don't know if he's going to be able to play. Obviously, Joel is still out. Like, they've had all these injuries. And the Clippers, like, they obviously should have won the game the other day, but they gotta start this road trip off with a win and try to start getting this thing turned around ASAP. Or else, you know, we could be talking about them incredibly being down there in the mix with all these other playing teams, which is like, you, I don't remember which one of you guys said it before we got on. It might've been you, Tim. Like, we were sitting there at the All-Star break going, well, we know the top four in the West and we'll see how it's going to go. And I mean, the Clippers have just absolutely sank like a stone, and Minnesota, despite Towns being out and everything that's happened there, you would have thought if anybody was going to drop, it'd be them. And they're sitting right there still fighting for a top two seed in the West. I mean, it's just been an amazing sequence of events.
Yeah, coming out of the break, we were like, okay, we know the top four teams, we just don't know the order. No, we didn't know the top four teams. We didn't. And then we're like, okay, we know 5 through 10, we just don't know the order. Well, we might not have known 5 through 10 either. I'm gonna see. It's funny, the two hottest teams in the West right now, well, I shouldn't say that, the three hottest teams, one's Denver, the other two are right here in the Lone Star State, baby. Mentioned the Mavericks, and those red hot Houston Rockets have lost a game in March. They are whatever and one in March and breathing down the neck of that Bay Area team that we shall not name. Well, if they drop to 11, we can name them. You said 9-10.
That's right, 9-10. Well, real quick, that team who we shall not name, who did win in Miami on Saturday, on Tuesday night, Jimmy Butler being a late scratch, he missed shoot around and was probable, still probable. And I was asked to make a pick on NBA Today, and I said, I do not make predictions. Actually, I have to do that all the time. But I said, I'm going to wait for Jimmy Butler. And Butler was a scratch. And then the team that shall not be named won that game when a future Hall of Fame two guard moved into the starting lineup. But for the
first time in a long time. That was interesting.
Last night, McMahon, you said something on our group chat as we were talking about the Clippers in big time reverse, about because the Suns had arguably the worst loss of the season.
Not arguably.
Any team.
I'm about to hit you guys.
That's the worst loss of the season. Given the stakes of where the Suns are at, to lose to the victorless Spurs, that horrible.
I'm about to give you guys some math.
Especially because they'd already lost to him twice already.
Well, hold on. Okay. Wendy's calculator works now.
All right.
He found it on his iPhone.
Here comes some math. First off.
God. Here we go. This is going to be trouble. Spurs, get Bobby Marks on speed dial.
The Spurs were 1-7 without Victor this year. Okay. That's number one. Number two, 19% of the Spurs' victories this year have come against the Suns.
It's better when you just say the numbers. 3 out of 16.
Yeah.
That makes it even worse.
Now, you talked about these teams spending money potentially to be in the play-in, and the Clippers aren't there yet, but,
they're spending a lot of money.
It's time to start talking about the Clippers, what they've lined themselves up against.
Is it time to start worrying about the Suns, the team you've repeatedly said not to worry about since June?
Just be quiet for a change. Okay. The Warriors payroll, they cut some at the trade deadline.
You can't say that.
Oh, sorry.
That's fine. You guys already blew through the ban. You don't listen anywhere.
$381 million, including taxes, for the team.
It's not great.
The team,
owe that pick to Portland.
The team in eighth, who is the Suns, who is now facing the hardest by winning percentage, the hardest 10-game stretch in a season in 9 years, is what they're going to now face down the stretch of these last 10 games after blowing this game that not only was a must-win game just because they were playing the Spurs without Wembanyama. It was a must-win game because it was the last thing on their schedule that was considered a gimme. Okay. Mm-hmm. Their payroll is $258 million, including taxes.
It's a lot. So that's a lot of money.
$381 in the Bay, $258 in the desert. Now, Clippers, who are not in the play-in, but it's on the rearview mirror.
Yep.
$313 million,
yep,
including taxes. Between those three teams, it's $360 million just in taxes this season.
Hey, you're approaching $900 million in total payroll and salary for those three teams.
That is not going to fly.
I would say it's not going to fly.
When it comes to the Suns, it's an absolutely unrecoverable number to talk about what the unsurvivable number that the Clippers are playing defensively over the last 6 weeks. The fact that the Phoenix Suns have the 30th ranked offense in the fourth quarter,
insane,
is absolutely preposterous. That number is going to create fallout. And if I was Chris Paul, when I go into contract negotiations as a possible free agent this summer, and I'm trying to maybe get my last contract, maybe one more year, I'm bringing that number to the table, because the lack of having organization and someone to get them into their offense, I don't care what anybody says, there is no doubt the lack of a point guard has dramatically affected their ability to execute in these fourth quarters. 30th, I feel like they could almost, at the beginning of the season, I would have argued they could have played 3-on-5 with those three guys and not being 30th.
And what's crazy is the numbers with those three guys overall are good. I think there's like 123.5 offensive rating with those three guys on the floor. I haven't looked at that number in the fourth quarter, though. It can't be good. And then, of course, the other problem is they're not on the floor together that much. And by the way, another reason this was the worst loss for any team all season long was because Bradley Beal hurt again. a finger sprain. Didn't
he's practice questionable. Today. Questionable for Wednesday.
So is Yusuf Nurkic. Sprained his ankle. Didn't practice today. Questionable against the Nuggets. I mean, it's, you know, Beal honestly, like, when he's been on the floor, his numbers are fine, but they're not $50 million in the luxury tax ramifications fine.
Speaking of Suns payroll. On Wednesday, it's a key day for Grayson Allen because that is when he becomes extension eligible. He is eligible to sign up to 4 years and $75 million. I think that's about $18 or $19 million a year. I don't have my calculator on that one.
It's a little over 18 a year, correct?
Okay. So I don't know if they're going to do this deal with Grayson now. You know, they got bigger fish to fry. It's an odd time to extend your contract. Jrue Holiday becomes extension eligible next Monday. He has a $39 million player option. He can sign for 4 years and $221 million as his max number. I would expect, as a quick aside here, Bontemps, that they do get a deal done there with Jrue Holiday. That's something in between the 39 next year and the 221. I think he will get a deal that goes beyond next year. He will not make 39 next year, and he will not get 221. There will be a deal somewhere in the middle there.
I mean, that feels like a safe bet eventually, whether it's before the season's over or this summer. I suspect Drew will be sticking around.
I think so, too. I think there's a possibility that gets done before the playoffs. However, on Grayson Allen, he's had an excellent year. He's been leading the NBA in three-point shooting for most of the year. And the Suns, I don't know if everybody understands the new rules, and I'm not going to go chapter and verse into the CBA, but like Grayson Allen, like that, I think that, like, I think $18 million a year for Grayson Allen's, you know, pretty fair number. I'm not sure he's getting any more than that in the open market from Detroit or Orlando or San Antonio. Maybe.
Well, listen, the bigger problem for Phoenix is whether you sit there and you say it's insane to pay Grayson Allen $75 million. If you're listening, you think that's crazy. The problem for the Suns is the same problem, at least I've been saying, since they made the Bradley Beal trade, which is under the new rules, their roster building and decision-making has been insane. And they have built a team that is full of terrible players.
Oh, come on. Minimum contracts. They're not terrible.
Yeah, they're the bottom two-thirds of their roster.
Okay, that's a fair statement. Now you're better.
Well, that's what I'm talking about.
You said
Kevin Durant is it.
Don't say
they have a team full of terrible players. That's the point. When those three guys are on the court in the fourth quarter, they've got a +4 net rating. Okay. They have injury problems, like we've talked about. They also went on this gambit and signed all these minimum players, hoping to get some good minimum players. We saw the prime LeBron James Miami Heat fail to win the title with three of the top, seven players in the league at the absolute apex of their careers with how many minimum players, Brian? 9, 10?
Well, what happened there? 11, 8? Yeah, two of their two non-minimum key role players got hurt during the year. But
my point is they had absolutely no depth. And that was with
they
guys
were running Eric Dampier and Jerry Stackhouse.
And that was at those guys were at the absolute apex of their careers.
That's correct.
About and Stacks, Miami tenure.
The Suns guys, obviously Devin Booker is in the prime of his career. Bradley Beal is not. Kevin Durant is not. So, like, when you get down to it, they have no ability to add players going forward. And if they don't want to pay Grayson Allen that money, they're just going to lose one of the other two or three good players they have on their team. That's what Grayson Allen's leverage is.
Pay him or replace him with a minimum.
Right. So Mark Termini, when he joined the podcast, that was the agent who joined the podcast last summer, he talked about this sort of strategy of negotiating. Grayson, normally you'd say, in the job market, you say, well, this is what I'd like. Well, good luck getting it. Well, hey, company B offered me this. Oh, okay, we'll give that to you. Normally that's the way it works. Grayson's going to be a free agent. You say, okay, Grayson, like, you know, we can't give you more than $18 million because nobody else is going to. And he goes, all right. Well, my leverage is if I leave, you literally can't replace me. Not that they can't go out and find a guy to hit the threes. Not that they can't find a player who's of his quality. They literally cannot replace him. The only thing that the Suns can sign this summer other than their own free agents, which is like Grayson Allen and Royce O'Neal, is minimum contracts. And they have no first round picks to trade, and they have nothing else really to trade.
Can they split some more of those swaps?
And yeah. And by the way, Bobby Marks and his numbers already has them over the second apron in guaranteed salary. And that's without signing Royce O'Neal. That's without signing Grayson Allen, two of their handful of good players. And by the way, in trading for Bradley Beal and not making him give up the no trade clause to do it, now they can't even trade him if they want to try. Even if they just wanted to arbitrage it and move him on, they can't. So they are as stuck can be. And by the way, on the same topic, if we had said before the season, since we blew through the ban earlier,
We didn't blow through it.
Well, we did because you started talking. You talked about the Warriors all around, and then you talked about the Warriors salary.
Now there's been two.
Well, if you look at Kevin Durant, LeBron James, and Steph Curry, and those guys, you said before the season, all those guys were going to play over 60 games. You would have said the Suns, and Warriors would have had pretty darn good seasons. And right now, they're in 8th, 9th, and 10th. I think it is a sign that, among other things, for as great as those guys still are, they're just not at the same level they were before in terms of being able to push their teams forward because they've been healthy all year, and this is where they sit.
So I can't, so as far as the Suns, yes, I didn't believe they were ever serious title contenders for this season. I did believe that they would get stronger as the season went along and they would be a factor. I believed that they needed another year of transactions to get this roster right. I didn't think they were operating on a one-year timeline. But yes, it's been not good.
And I thought they were a top six team. I said it, and I will give the USWB credit. I mean, his pee occasionally hits the target. the urine was on the money in this one. He said,
this was a team that predicted some
play-in potential here.
I think you are very much rewriting history, Brian, and your talk about the Suns. What I will say is,
I never thought they would win the title this year. I mean, how could you say that Denver wouldn't be the favorite?
The Suns had, if everything came together perfectly, the Suns had a window this year to potentially be a high level team. But that required everything to come together perfectly. And instead, it's been more or less, I think, the median outcome on a lot of this stuff. And as a result, they're just not that good.
Well, and you know what the best thing the Brooklyn Nets have going for them right now?
That they've got a lot of Phoenix Suns draft assets.
So real quick on the Suns before I move on, because I mentioned the fourth quarter, I just want to enumerate it.
Big word.
The Big Suns word. Net rating, points per 100 possessions in the fourth quarter, is negative 14.
Woo!
Okay.
That is not great.
That is 30th. The team in 29th is the Miami Heat, which is interesting because that's a team that you wouldn't expect, but
who'd have thunk it?
They are. The Heat's is minus 7.
So they are twice as bad as anybody else in the fourth quarter.
That's
according to my calculations.
You got it.
That's some big time math right there, buddy.
The difference between the Heat and the Suns, 7 points per 100 possessions, is the same difference between the team in 29th place and the team in 15th. And by the way, the Pistons, who are one of the worst fourth quarter teams in the league, are 12 points better in the fourth quarter this year per 100 possessions than the Suns. And no, I didn't see that one coming.
Bontemps, remember when we saw the Suns in Madison Square Garden? Booker hit the buzzer beater. Didn't see this coming at that point. I will say this. I talked to Booker, I talked to him for a story about kind of this trend away from the traditional point guard, and Booker kind of epitomizes it. I asked him about making that transition, and he said that the one time he thought you might need that CP3 kind of classic run the show type point guard is down the stretch in close games. That was the one thing he considered a challenge to be able to, thrive in those situations. And obviously, by and large, the Suns sure have not thrived in those situations.
Assist to turnover ratio in the fourth quarter, 29th. They're better than the Blazers. Congratulations.
Well, that's good.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Okay, so this was a test game, in my view, for one team tonight, which was the Oklahoma City Thunder. They went up to Milwaukee on Saturday and were, was it Saturday or Sunday? It was Saturday. Was it Sunday? I think it was Sunday.
I believe it was Sunday, yeah. And they got absolutely smacked.
They had the Milwaukee flu.
No, they had Giannis kicking their ass up and down flu is what they had.
They lost to another bigger team. Yes. That was the bigger takeaway for me.
And Shea stunk it up by his standards, and Chet had a 1 of 10 total stinker.
Yeah. So
and they got mauled on the boards again.
Yes, it's very, you know, they may end up what they got out of the trade deadline, which was a pick swap from the Mavericks and Gordon Hayward, who might end up being, he's not being very effective on the floor at all.
No.
That's being charitable.
He had a little stretch where he was productive in a limited role, but by and large, he's been a dud.
Yeah, he did not score in the game on.
He's 22 for 59 in 17 games now.
Yeah,
it's not great.
But they might be able to turn him with some draft capital. He may end up being used as a as ballast in a trade. What I'm saying is, I can't completely grade the Thunder on their trade deadline maneuvers yet, but they elected to, or at least were unable to find,
right,
rebounding and interior help.
I think it's safe to say that they stuck to the stance that whether you agree with it or not, I will say that Sam Presti has been very consistent and that they wanted to see what this team would look like in the playoffs and then make adjustments like they did the first time around when they eventually went and got Kendrick Perkins did the swap for Jeff Green. And eventually after they saw when the playoffs had started to make changes, they're clearly hewing to the same line again this time around. Now you could say they should have gone and done, I'm not saying you, just in general, right, they could have gone and done something, but they made it clear they wanted to, you know, finish their breakfast, as Presti famously said, and they're going to wait and see how it looks.
And Hayward was as much about creating, like, obviously they hoped he'd be a contributor and we'll see what happens there. But he was also, that was as much about creating flexibility this summer as it was, you know, trying to gear up for a playoff run. And everything they've done this year, they facilitated the Harden trade, you know, to get another swing at a lottery pick in 27. They facilitated the Daniel Gafford deal to Dallas to get what they, you know, what they think is a lottery swing, a potential lottery swing in 28. And look at the way Gafford's playing. You know, put it this way, Luka Doncic is very, very happy about the Daniel Gafford deal. But 28's a long time from now, and it was a swing worth taking for the Thunder. But in the here and now, they have not been aggressive trying to upgrade this roster, which is way ahead of schedule. They made a 16-win jump last year, and they might make another six. They probably will make another 16-plus win jump this year. So I think you can argue for patience when you're way ahead of schedule. But they have not done everything they could to be foot on the gas trying to win the West right now.
Yeah. But, you know, they really had a, in my view, a pretty big challenge against them to go down into New Orleans, a team that in theory could be a second round playoff opponent.
Be a first round playoff opponent.
Sure could. That could easily be a 3-6, even a 2-7.
3-6.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, but more than anything, I just kind of wanted to see how they would bounce back after that, really getting beat down. And they had a very strong team-wide performance. It wasn't even like a good Shea game. He didn't score 30 and only shot 9 of 20.
He said afterward he's been dealing with some quad soreness since the game they played against Utah a few games ago. Got a knee in the quad in that game. And he's certainly tailed off a bit since then.
I think they finished the game 12-0.
They did. Zion didn't score over the final 3 minutes after dominating a lot of the game.
Go ahead.
The Pelicans, I'm a little surprised that they weren't right down there with the Suns fourth quarter. I know they've had more than their share of struggles closing out games. They win a lot of games comfortably, but late and close, you like your chances against the Pelicans.
Well, I will tell you, in fact, where they rank. They rank 24th.
Well, there you go.
And still 12 points better in those fourth quarter net rating than
and look, they ran a lot with Zion at the point in this game. It was very interesting. He was able to get downhill a lot, get into Chet Holmgren in the paint a lot. You know, he ended up getting 10 free throws in the game, was 10 for 17, was doing a really good job getting out in transition, getting some quick attacks before they could really set the defense up against him. But down the stretch, Thunder made some adjustments, were able to keep him from really getting into the defense with the ball. And, you know, despite the fact that he had 29 and 10 assists last couple minutes of the game, they were able to make things go in other directions. And look, I've also been very critical of Josh Giddey, and I have a lot of skepticism of how that's going to work in the playoffs, but he's made a bunch of threes in recent games and went 5 for 8 in this game and hit some huge shots down the stretch.
Career high.
Yeah. I mean, that was a big performance to help them win a, you know, big game on the road. Like you said, especially coming off getting smacked against Milwaukee. They've got an interesting trip coming up. They're going to be out here on the East Coast. They're going to be in Boston next Wednesday. They had a pretty tremendous game against the Celtics in Oklahoma City earlier this year. They play the Suns Friday. They play the Knicks
on
Sunday.
Hold on. I'm heading up to OKC in the morning. They got the red hot Houston Rockets.
They're playing the hottest team in the league, the Rockets, on Wednesday. Right. So,
second night of a back-to-back. That's a great opportunity for the Rockets.
So it's going to be – they've got some real interesting games coming up here. And as we just talked about, they're in an absolute dogfight with both Denver and Minnesota to try to be as high of a seed as they could possibly be in the first round.
You know, and the Giddey thing, we talked about their patient approach. Sticking with Giddey has been, you know, the epitome of patience. You can argue, well, hey, there's not another reasonable solution there. You know, you don't want a small team to get much smaller, whatever. But, you know, their whole thing was like, hey, he's a young player. You know, he's got a lot of talent. Obviously, he's working with Chip England, and they're like, give him time. He's learning how to play off the ball, et cetera, et cetera. One game does not a fit make, but he was huge for him tonight. And I, you know, the thing with Chet, obviously, we talk about him being tough for us, especially for a skinny guy, a lot. Mental toughness is pretty critical. And again, after that 1-10 stinker, he bounced back and had not a huge number performance, but 16 points, 9 rebounds, 4 assists, couple blocks, a plus 16, which was the best plus minus in the game. You know, came back and had a really nice performance. You mentioned Hayward. Minus 19 when your team wins by 7 is pretty hard to do, but he pulled it off tonight.
Minus 19 in 10 minutes.
He would have been a trillionaire, except for he took 2 shots. So it would have been all zeros across the board, but he took 2 shots.
So it's
not been great.
Yeah. So one thing I wonder about this game. So Zion did have an excellent game. He had his first 25 point, 10 assist game of his career. He actually had 29 points, but 25 and 10. He also had 3 steals. But one of the things that's going on with the Pelicans that bears watching, since Brandon Ingram has gone out with this knee injury, they've really kept Zion's minutes down this year. Mm-hmm. I think he's at the lowest. Let me check here. I think he's at the lowest of his career. They've had to boost his minutes. So he is at the lowest since his rookie season. He's been playing a little over 2 minutes less per game, only averaging 30 a game than he was last year.
31.
He played his most minutes since November, a couple of nights ago when they played the Pistons. And then in the game on Tuesday night, he played 39 minutes, 3 more minutes than he played in any game this season. Maybe it was 2.5, whatever, however the seconds work. And the fact that he wasn't able to, now they did make some adjustments down the stretch. And because it was Larry Nance out there getting 33 minutes, which is more than he should be getting, and not Brandon Ingram. It was easier for the Thunder to pack the paint with Chet Holmgren. But I do wonder if part of the reason that Zion went sort of away down the stretch, in addition to the strong defense that the Thunder played.
Well, as if he was a little fatigued, for sure.
I do think that that may have been the case. And well, so I
mean, he maybe saves energy by not rebounding.
Yeah, he didn't. His double-double tonight was not with rebounds. Well,
I will give him credit, too, because, again, we have poked fun at him in the past. He looks good physically. Yeah. Like, he's definitely Ched weight and is moving around better. I mean, I don't think he's ever going to have the explosion that he once did and what, you know, made him potentially really, like, truly special player, but or potential player. But he's done a good job getting himself back to a much better place than where he was at the first couple months of the season.
Look, most nights there's a highlight of Zion catching a lob in transition. I mean, that means he's getting up and down the floor and all that, but I don't understand how he's that bad of a rebounder. Like, if your athletic comp is Charles Barkley, when you're a big wide body who's crazy explosive and you can't average 6 rebounds?
Yeah, he's averaging under 6 rebounds.
And he had 5 tonight in 39 minutes against a team that's biggest flaw it's is a great, they it's a very struggle fair to point. Keep teams off the glass.
Yeah, very fair point. So maybe they need to boost his minutes a little bit because he needs to get into a zone where he plays more than 30 because they're probably going to need more than 30 in the postseason. Maybe it's because they just, with Ingram, they need him out there a little bit more, but I do wonder, and that's something I think to watch. I haven't seen Willie Green's post game.
Well, and the other thing to watch is the stretch of the schedule they're going into, which we've talked about a bunch, which started with this game against the Thunder. They then get Milwaukee on Thursday. They then get Boston on Saturday. They then get Phoenix on Monday, and then they get Orlando on Wednesday. I mean, five straight games at home against pretty high level playoff opponents. Like, that was going to be a really interesting test for this group. Obviously, it sucks that BI got hurt because we couldn't quite see these guys at full power, but still, like, this is a big stretch for them. And like, I thought I would watch a bunch of this game. I was bopping back and forth between a couple of games. I thought they were pretty impressive performance. They had Larry Nance left for a bit with an injury. Jose Alvarado left for a bit with an injury. Like, yeah, especially
Jose
without
Alvarado
Ingram.
Took an unfortunate blow.
Yeah, but they acquitted themselves pretty well in this game, I thought, even though they ended up losing. But that's
they came back from 20 down.
Yeah, but again, we're talking about how bunched up all these teams are. Like, yeah, if the Pelicans could push forward here, they got a shot to be fourth. They also could go 1-4 in this stretch. Then they're going to be right in the mix for, potentially being back in the play-in again in a week. And like, it's just these final couple of weeks from that standpoint are just going to be truly fascinating with how bunched up all these teams are. There's a decent amount of games between them down the stretch. The Kings and Pelicans play the final couple of days of the regular season. Actually, I just looked at this now. Pelicans end the season at Sacramento Thursday, at Golden State Friday, and home for the Lakers Sunday. Could be consequential weekend for him.
By the way, there was another comeback in the NBA on Tuesday night. The team that shall not be named, that's based in Southern California, came back from, was it 19 down or 20 down on the fourth with 8 minutes to play. Anthony Davis with a 30-23. I think he had four blocks. LeBron did not play in that game. The Bucks 0-2 against the without LeBron this year.
0-2 without in the last 10 days.
Right. The Bucks were a little frustrated with the officiating in this game. I was talking to a head coach the other day, and he quoted almost down to the number exactly how many more free throws than team in the purple and gold.
Which head coach?
I don't know. Don't know. Don't know. But it's now.
Where's that hotel you're staying in?
It's in Los Angeles. It was not at the hotel. I didn't say when it was. I've been around a number of teams in recent days here in Los Angeles,
including one that the head coach publicly pointed out the free throw disparity.
the free throw disparity was plus 15 for the Lakers. Oops, for the
we've blown through it. It's fine. We've blown through it. It was by the way, 15. By Friday, they might both be out of, on their way to like battles to be out of the respective spots.
One of them might be in seventh, and one of them might be in 11th by. Well,
that's
by,
what I mean.
Weekend.
It's,
yeah,
it's it become the way that it's gone. It's become a lot more relevant anyway.
That said, I forgot to do. I forgot to do a height check on that Pacers game.
Oh Jesus!
By the way. Speaking of that, have you seen this State Farm? I think the writers for State Farm are listening to this podcast because there's a new State Farm commercial where Chris Paul is in it with a referee and where he's arguing with him. Big surprise.
Was it an actual referee?
No. Oh. He's towering over this referee, oh. Man. He's 4 inches taller than this referee.
Well, we know Chris, friend of the pod. Maybe he gave him the idea. Hey, listen.
Yeah.
So the referee is like 5'4"?
Take McMahon's theory. Get a small ref out here, please.
By the way, how about the other night? I think it was last Friday. Tony Brothers ejecting Chris Paul with 6 seconds left in the game.
And CP3, who you always got to take his explanations of interactions with the referees with a grain of salt. But he said it was because he told Tony Brothers he's a TikToker.
Well, he posted a video of Tony Brothers on his TikTok account, like, moments after the game, like of some interview Tony Brothers gave, which I mean,
I'm sure buddy, he got a stern talking to from Adam Silver. I bet you,
anyway,
the old sheriff.
Oh, Lord.
It is now. By the way, the have now shot 435 more free throws than their opponents this season. But listen,
that?
They go to the basket.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
But Anthony
and
Davis
despite all that, they're still in ninth. LeBron and AD are healthy. They're getting 7 more free throws. Their opponent's a game. None of it matters.
LeBron and or AD was awesome. Austin Reeves had pretty much the game-winning basket and a triple-double. I think he had 25-point triple-double. There was a great stat from Stats and Info. I want to give credit to Stats Williams, but I want to be honest and fair here. The last time a team had a player with a 30-20 game and a 25-point triple-double was, did you guys see this stat?
Nope.
It's in 1966.
Okay, repeat the numbers again. I'm going to guess who it is.
Are you going to say Bob Pettit?
No.
The last time a team had a guy with a 30-point, 20-rebound game and a guy with a 25-point triple-double in the same night.
I bet you'll get one of the names, McMahon.
Wilt.
Not Wilt.
It's always Wilt.
It's a very good guess, but no.
Oscar Robertson.
Robertson is the one I thought you'd get. The other one's a Hall of Famer that you're not going to get.
Yeah.
Oh, would that have been back in his
It's Jerry Lucas is who,
okay.
Who did yeah. it. You
it was
not
before
guess
Lou
Lucas.
Alcindor was in the NBA, I
yes.
believe. So.
Yeah. By the way, you know where the Lakers...
with the Kansas City Royals. Or the Cincinnati Royals, I believe, actually.
You know where the team that shall not be named that plays at Crypto.com Arena ranks and drives per game in the league?
Good question. Don't know.
Bon Temps, any guesses?
I'm going to guess first.
26th.
Oh, there you go.
So don't talk to me about, it's because the Lakers are talking
They
about
drive to the rim occasionally.
26th.
Oh, my God.
You know.
It's great.
By the way, Anthony Davis played a career-high 52 minutes in this game, and they have a game on Wednesday night in Memphis.
I suspect he will not be playing in Memphis.
And he banged his knee, I think, in the first overtime, but yeah.
Pet peeve coming out of that game, by the way. I wish these coaches would sub in overtimes. Doesn't you don't have to sub everybody?
Pet peeve, overtime is too long. 3 minutes, not well, five, three.
All right. Well, if you want to change the
sudden
time,
death.
Fine. But
second
we see
one's
these,
sudden death. Next
we see
wins,
these teams
game
just
point.
We see Go these teams two. Just drag these guys out there for all these super intense minutes. Like by the second overtime of this game, or anybody who was watching,
oh my God,
everybody on both teams couldn't walk. They were all exhausted. And if you just subbed in like one guy on either team, probably would have made a massive difference.
They were.
I think they should do overtimes. Like instead of sudden death for the second overtime, I think it should be like a soccer shootout, but with half court shots.
Those two teams were running in sand on top of mud in that second overtime. I mean, I mean, the Laker, oops, the purple and gold were barely moving and they were beating the Bucks up the court. I mean, AD was walking pretty much. I mean, he was getting every rebound and challenging every shot. It wasn't like he wasn't, but like he was just like, he was resting on offense. He was just like, and they were still beating him back. So I look, absolutely agree with you, Bontemps. That's a classic thing that teams forget. It's like, oh, we finished the game with our second string power forward. Let's just keep him in the game. Like, what about the first stringer? but yeah, I, and by the way, I think the same for college. 5 minute overtimes for college. No, 3 minutes, 3 minutes and 1 minute for the second overtime. That's what we'll settle on. But all right, it's late. Jackson's got to edit this. Got it. He said he was going to beep out all the L's and W's, but you know, he doesn't have all, he's going to be up till dawn. If he does that.
Look at the, look, the ban was instituted when those teams were like comfortably sitting in those spots, but now we're, they're not.
Anymore. I wouldn't say they were comfortable.
Yeah. Well, you know what I mean? Where they weren't going anywhere. Now, like, they're in the middle of things. So it's a little
bit. Oh, so you're quitting?
You're pulling, I mean, the way things are going, the Suns might be in 10th in a couple of days. So we'll see.
All right. Well, it was a very high efficiency night in the NBA. Four games and lots of intrigue. Very, very high efficiency. All right. Thank you to Bontemps. Thank you to McMahon. Thank you to Jackson, our producer. Thank you for listening and watching the Hoop Collective. We will talk to you later this week.
Adios, amigos.